So thank you for joining us today as we get behind Bundle to discuss mental health, Zoom fatigue, and how children are dealing with all of those effects. Joining us today is Dr. Charlotte Resnick, psychologist, author, and former UCLA Associate Clinical Professor of Psychology. She also holds a PhD in educational psychology and has been featured on Psychology Today and the Huffington Post. Welcome, Dr. Resnick.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us. So let's get right into it. As we continue to have more meaningful conversations around mental health, how can parents and caregivers discuss these topics with children?
I think you want to, depending on the child's age, you know, if they're little, middle, you know, tweens, teens, you want to kind of speak to them as you normally would. And maybe even you're addressing it kind of like if you haven't addressed it before, you want to maybe talk about how, you know, their physical health is really important, and at school they help them with learning new things, but not too many places discusses their emotional health.
Right.
When I think of mental health, I think of mental as more of a logical kind of thing. I know we're talking about mental health versus physical health, but I really think of it as emotional health. Like, who addresses their emotions so that they could be as happy and healthy as they would like to be? And so you might say, you know, I think it's time for our house, it's time for us to pay attention to that. Because one, we've been going through a lot recently. And even if it's way beyond this time in our lives, it's really important to address. I mean, I've devoted my life to helping kids be happier and healthier in their emotions and learn to manage them. Sometimes kids feel something's wrong with them if they get angry because their parents yell at them or get mad at them or, you know, are not pleased with them. And yet the full range of emotions, of human emotions, is normal. It's kind of what we do with them. And it's how we take care of them and how we take care of ourselves. For me, for instance, every day I wake up and I meditate, either by myself or in a small group. And that helps set me up for the day. Not like it's going to be a great day, but it will be a calmer day. So I think what would be helpful is to be a good role model for your kids. Like not to just tell, you know, the old do as I say, not as I do. That doesn't really work. So if the kids see that it's important to the home, to the family, to you, they're more likely to pay attention to it. Except maybe teenagers who will do the opposite.
So no, it really is like you have to talk the talk and walk the walk. If you're going to promote self-care practices, you have to do
you really do. And so you have to talk to kids differently and make it in their own interest. I mean, we like to think that our kids are empathetic to others and understand bigger concepts, you know, when they get a bit older. But really, to get a child to do something new that they haven't really paid attention before, they really, it has to be like something in it for them. They have to. And what's in it for them is that they like to feel happier, healthier, calmer. And you could do this by using lots of examples, you know, kind of like when, you know, when your friend Rachel said something hurtful to you on the Zoom play date. Wow, that really bummed you out for the rest of the day. You were irritable, you were angry, you were hurt, and it was kind of tough. And would you like, when someone hurts you or insults you, to be able to bounce back faster? And you want to ask your kids questions that are probably going to be yes questions, you know, yes answers. Yeah, sure, I'd love to be able to do that because, you know, ruined my day. Or with a teenager, all kinds of things are happening now with teenagers online and Zoom and however they're communicating. And you just want to find out what's important to your child, whether they're 4 or 9 or 15 or 18 or 3. You might know some of these things already and you want to use them to entice them. Most people will want to be happier and calmer and healthier and more loving. Or in terms of the home, would you like the home to be more happier, healthier, calmer, more loving? Most kids will say yes. So once they say yes, then you could teach them some skills. You might ask them, hey, are you willing to learn some new stuff so that we could have our home like that? Now, some kids will say, well, what do I have to do? But most of them will just say, yeah. Or they need to think about it, and that's okay. So it is walking the talk, you know, kind of like saying what you mean, meaning what you say, and doing what you say. You know, kind of be congruent, authentic, have integrity. And we want our kids to have that also. So I think wherever you are, whether your kids are young or older, you could start there. You know, people come and see me all the time and they feel bad they haven't been there. You know, they didn't come 4 years earlier. And I, you know, like, yeah, sure. But you're here now. We're here now thinking about mental health and that it is, it's probably more important, you know, in some respects than anything else. But it's certainly as important as your physical health, in my mind. Of course, that's my chosen profession, so it is important. But I just see kids can be so miserable in good circumstances and pretty happy in awful circumstances. And it's so much about how they see the world, how they see themselves. And, you know, it's, we can't control what the world is doing maybe or what someone else is doing, but we can have some control on our response.
Yeah. No, I think it's, I really like this idea that mental health is this catchphrase for everything, but when you boil it down, it's really about like emotional health, which I think people overlook often. So I think that's a really important point. And what are signs of burnout in children and teens that parents should watch for? How can they help prevent it?
Wow, that's a really important question. The answer, the short answer is you look for change. Like if your child is more irritable than usual, or they're not eating as well, or they're not eating, or they're eating more, or they're not sleeping well, or they're sleeping more, or they're, you know, less patient, or you look for a real change in what has been the norm for you. Now, probably that's going on during COVID. Anyway, you're seeing that because everyone's stressed out. I just spoke with a pediatrician yesterday, and she's seeing the same kind of issues I'm seeing. There's like more tics. There's more other kinds of anxiety. There's more exhaustion. There's more overwhelm. I think kids and adults, too, have a shorter fuse. So it's kind of like if the teacher assigns a bunch of different homework, and there's like a little list, I might say, I can't do any of it and just shut down. It's just too much. They just get overwhelmed. And we have to teach them, is there a way to prepare for that? I think the way to prepare is to really pay attention to your feelings in the moment. You know, what one might call mindfulness, being mindful of how your feelings, take a temperature, you know, a feelings temperature check, kind of like, where's your stress now? 0 to 10 scale. Where would you like it to be? You know, where's your happiness quotient? Is it down at 3 or is it up at 7? You know, kind of pay attention to what's going on inside. I always have kids, sometimes they'll do a self-feeling portrait. And instead of like actual nose and mouth, they put their feelings, like, where are those good feelings, positive feelings, where are those feelings they're uncomfortable to have? And once you start having almost a language to talk about the feelings, then you might be able to get a handle on them as they start going up. I'll ask kids, because a lot of it is like getting angry, like very quick to anger. And I'll ask kids, do you know this, the anger kind of coming up? Or is it like 0 to 100 immediately? And sometimes, you know, sometimes it comes up right away and sometimes they get a feeling for it. So I try to help them. I think this is important to pay attention to that little voice or that little light inside, that little voice that's saying, oh, maybe not punch, you know, this person, my brother, you know, maybe just walk away. So it's also getting, having kids develop and get in touch with their intuition and that wise voice inside. Because I really think the kids do have wisdom, more than they know, more than we know. And one of the ways to help them manage these big emotions and get a be in better emotional health is to work with those feelings and see that they have some control over them. Whether it's simple, like doing some deep breathing and breathing out their anger and breathing in love or calmness or connecting with the older, wiser part of themselves to ask what they could do since they've gotten through, you know, a difficult situation, what they suggest, or they bring in when they're younger, maybe animal friends that could help them out, give them a gift, what to do about sharing if they don't want to, whatever question comes up that would kind of throw them off, then they could ask. I have one boy that has like a whole slew of animal friends that help him, whether it's doing his homework or staying on Zoom or being nice to his sister. They all come and give him ideas. And it's kind of tapping into his imagination and bypassing his logical brain. So he's in a more creative state and a more intuitive state. And it's more fun. You know, instead of saying to your child, why do you, you know, push your brother? It's kind of like, oh, who could come in and help give you some ideas about how to handle it? So depending on your child, if he's more imaginative and creative or more logical, you just speak to him that way. Kind of like when kids are upset, no matter the age, I kind of maybe drew a picture of their brain inside their head and teach them very simply about the amygdala, which is like the fight or flight area. And when that's set off, and now kids are much more hypersensitive, when the amygdala is high, it shuts down our logical thinking and our frontal lobe, which is like the front part of our brain. So we can't think. That's why when we say anger, you know, you see red with anger. You can't think if you're angry. You can't think logically when you're scared. So you have to kind of calm it down. So some of the kids that are more scientifically oriented are interested in that. And other kids that are more creative and imagine, you know, into their imagination might be interested in, you know, a protective animal friend coming to help them. You know, whether it's someone that one girl was having trouble sleeping, whether she put a tiger at the door to help her feel safe, or she thought, you know, or another child thought, okay, let me calm down that amygdala. Let me do some deep breathing. I call it the balloon breath. It's kind of a meditation breath. You just kind of work with the kind of child or teen that you have.
Yeah, I really like this idea of you know, keeping it an open environment where children and teens feel comfortable coming to you as parents. And it's not like you're accusing them or, you know, you're allowing them to open up to you and not be defensive. So I think that's like important, just creating that environment where they feel like they can, that you are there, like just meant to support them and guide them and be helpful and not get them in trouble. So I love this idea of just keeping it open and creating an environment where it can be a conversation that you can come together to come to a solution.
I think that's so important. At whatever age your child is, and for the future, because you want them to feel safe that they're not going to get in trouble. I'll often tell kids, well, let your parents know I want to tell you something, but I want you to promise not to get mad at me. You know, so it opens up that safety. And to think of it as parents is kind of like you're on the same team. You're older, wiser than your child, but it's more like it's not so much they did something bad or have bad behavior, but okay, here's a situation that came up. Here's a problem, crisis. Let's put our heads together and figure out how to make it work better.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we touched on this a little bit, but I'd love to dive deeper. As everyone knows, the need for adults to focus on self-care has been a very large focal point over the last few months. What can parents do to help their children engage in self-care practices to promote their own physical, mental, and emotional health? So everything combined together.
We could go back to be a good role model.
Right.
You have to at least, if you're expecting your child to do something, anything, you really have to be willing to do it yourself. Because, I mean, I have, you know, one family we were talking to, and the parents are trying to get him out in nature more and take walks. Well, he really likes to run. So his dad volunteered to run with him, whereas his mom, her legs were hurting. She didn't want to run. So, but at least he had his dad that would be willing. He probably surpasses dad, but that's okay. So it's being a good role model, and it's also making some items a ritual and part of your daily habit. Like we brush our teeth 2 or 3 times a day. We're going to take a minute, 2 minutes, up to 5 minutes to do a little meditation every day, twice a day. Just make it part of the family routine, whether you have to sit and do it with them or go outside and participate together, that's okay. Whatever it takes, because you want to make it fun when we're starting something new. We want to make it fun if you can, because otherwise kids aren't going to keep it up. You could yell at them and they'll get scared and maybe do something, but they won't keep it up.
I agree with you. I think that the routine is the hardest part, right? It's like after the new year, everyone tries their New Year's resolutions, but until you make it a habit and just part of your everyday, it's really hard to stick to it. So I think trying to make it as much of a routine as possible is the way where you can actually see success and change. But it's definitely the hardest part as well.
Yeah, and start small. Yeah. Like I'll start teaching, if I want to introduce meditation, I'll start with 3 breaths, you know, and have them breathe about 2 inches below their belly button, which in Eastern thought is a dantin. But then we'll do 3 breaths. That's enough. And then do that a couple of times a day. Or we'll do 10 breaths, which is about a minute for them. So just start small and then slowly increase things, whatever you're going to do. And we know that about if someone wants to take up running or exercise, often, you know, you do a little bit and then you move on. And people, the idea of how long does a habit take? I mean, some research used to say a month, but others up to 6 months or so. It might take a while. And also there's pre-habit. There's like thinking about and preparing. Say we're talking about going outside and walking or running. We're thinking about it and we're preparing our mind and our resolution. So just because it's not a change in behavior doesn't mean something's not going on. They might be getting used to the idea. Whether it's cleaning their room, which I think is really taking care of your inner self. I always think of the room of a kid as like, you know, you could tell how messy their brain is by how messy their room is. And their closets are like they're unconscious. So, I mean, even though I'll say they're a parent, hey, could you see the floor? If you could see the floor, that's a good sign. But when I work with the kids directly, I do let them know it's a metaphor for how their brain is doing and how they're doing.
I love that metaphor. With virtual school kicking off into its third quarter and children, you know, have been engaging more and more in online social gatherings, how can we give children and teens meaningful virtual engagements and tackle the real challenge of screen fatigue?
Well, got to take breaks. Some of the kids I speak to, they're on Zoom school and then it's over, they're happy, it's done, but then they immediately go to video games with their friends. Now that's a really different activity. They really enjoy that versus a Zoom school. I don't know too many people that enjoy Zoom school. Rarely. I mean, you know, kids are turning off their screen so the teachers can't see them. They can see the teachers. But a lot of kids are taking naps or doing other things or texting with their friends.
Well, it's hard to stay engaged because you're in a classroom with 20 people and there's no one-on-one interaction or even small group interaction.
Well, they sometimes break in, you know, they do breakout rooms.
Right.
And sometimes they do that, but kids don't talk too much about that. And then they have this thing, I love that they use asynchronistic work. Meaning you're working all on your by yourself. I don't know why they came up with that funny word. But I suggested, because a lot of kids don't want to do work by themselves. They're lonely enough. So I suggested, well, ask your teacher if you could make a breakout room with kids and you just study and work. At least you're keeping each other company. I don't know if they're really doing that. They're really on their own a lot. And meaningful contact. I guess it's the how old the kids are. So sometimes they do group chats. Sometimes that could get messy. You know, it's the whole idea of whether you could say something on a group chat that would really hurt someone. So you have to really be involved with your kids and make sure, you know, you talk about your values and how to treat people and, you know, the old golden rule kind of thing. Sometimes they're getting together now and it's changed from, there's one girl I'm thinking about, I thought she was very depressed. And all of a sudden last week, finally, she got together at school a little bit. They had kind of outdoor school for a few hours, and now they're doing sports at school. And then she saw a friend, and they went out to outside dining, because where I am, there's outside dining, but not inside. You know, it's pretty shut down. But wherever you are, if you could have real contact, even if it's 6 feet away, that makes a big difference. It's much better in the flesh than over, you know, FaceTime or Zoom or whatever kids are using. And they do a lot of chats where they're not even seeing each other, which I kind of like if you could see someone, because you're more connected, you know, a little bit less connected when you're chatting. You don't get the tone, you don't get the voice, you don't get a lot of things you do when you're seeing someone and when you're with them in person. So hopefully that's becoming more and more possible.
I actually really like your idea of like, you know, almost like a virtual study group, maybe one or two other students, because I know even at our company, a lot of times when people are like craving social interaction, they'll just turn their videos on, you know, Teams or Zooms, just like do work and chat with each other or sometimes eat lunch. But it's just like kind of nice to have someone to talk to while you're doing independent work. So I think that's an interesting idea that I hadn't thought about for students, that when they're doing their homework, they can just have their friend on and they're doing it together or doing it separately and talking every few minutes. I think that's a great way to stay engaged where it doesn't feel as, you know, screen time or
right.
Like that.
Right. I think it'll make a big difference. You know, It's kind of like some of the kids I know are in a little bit of a pod. So they are either doing school together, you know, one day they're at one house, one day they're at another. Or they're doing homework together, or they're getting tutoring together. And that really makes it much more fun. Oh my God, much more fun. Definitely. Having someone. And if you can't do that in person, you could do that in the breakout rooms or some kind of way where you're doing your homework together. It's more fun. And you can help each other out. And it's not like prison. You know, it's not like prison.
So you spoke a bit about how people are starting to kind of like re-engage in society and see each other in person. So even with social distancing practices still in place, many children are stressed and feeling anxiety at the thought of going to in-person classes, camps, or social engagement for just fear of catching COVID or simply because they've forgotten what it's like and feel anxious. I think even adults feel it as well. Yeah. What advice do you have for parents to help them reintegrate children into society?
I would do it slowly. I'm really a big fan of doing things slowly and one bit at a time. So have one friend over or meet in a park for half hour. You know, like just do it slowly and find out what your child is comfortable with and what their fears are. You know, if their fears are, well, we might get a variant, you know, even though you're vaccinated or even though I'm young and likely not going to get it, I might. So we're double masks. You know, you try to address their concerns one by one, even if what they say might not be, you know, accurate, but it's accurate for them. It's their truth. So just stay calm. That's so important. Like if the kids overhear you talking to someone that you're really worried or they see you panic, they're going to pick up on that. And then you could always go back and said, you know, I was speaking to your aunt and I was really just these worried thoughts. It's not really how I feel all the time, but it, you know, about 20% of the time I feel this way. But I think, how about you? You know, do you have some scary thoughts or worried thoughts? Like how much of the pizza pie is it taking up in your life? And get more communication that way. And then just do things slowly, you don't have to wait forever. Just I think as our country is doing better, and I know some states are beginning to open wide up and some are not, but we got some direction like this morning from Dr. Fauci that said, let's wait till it's 10,000 a day, not 60,000. Mm-hmm. So you have to see how you feel. But people I know, a lot of kids that I know out here, they do have pods of three or four families, and that helps. And other kids, they don't want to go out at all. So a little bit of time. If you're doing better, they're going to do better.
Yeah, I always feel like kids are so adaptable and they do better than adults with change. So just as, you know, I feel like kids adapted to the new normal with COVID and school from home, and it took a while, but they got there. And I think it'll be the same thing, hopefully going back into society and their normal before COVID. So I think kids always surprise us by how adaptable they are. And I think that they'll continue to surprise us in the future. So it's good to hear that you're not worried about it at all.
I'm not worried, but I think there's going to be a period of healing.
Right.
Like this whole year moving forward, as we go back, sometimes kids are going to like get a little bit overwhelmed or freak out or have like a delayed trauma reaction. You just want to be aware of that. And being with their friends and being able to hug their friends, that will make a big difference. And hug extended family that they haven't been, that will really help. It's just really a tough time. And some little girl was really having trouble on Mondays going back to Zoom school. She was really worried and anxious. And it was like a breath of fresh air when she realized other kids are nervous too. Or other kids are anxious too. She didn't realize she wasn't the only one. I think a lot of kids go through that. They think they're feeling different, they're feeling weird, they're overwhelmed, and nobody else feels like that. And so you want to talk to your kids about that. This is something we're all going through around the world. We're all going to have similar feelings.
Yeah, I think, again, just going back to like the theme throughout this conversation, just being really open with your family, no matter how old your child is, and just making it a conversation. And like you said, everyone's on the same team and everyone's experiencing change right now. So just knowing that you can speak about it openly is one of the most important things.
Yep. Makes sense.
Well, this has been amazing. Honestly, I feel really hopeful coming from this conversation.
Oh, good.
I've got a lot of tips to do with my own daughter, even though she's on the younger side, like under 2 years old. But I think these are all important things. And I think also it's good to know that like you're not alone, right? Like all parents are dealing with this and everyone's trying to figure out as we go. We're all just, you know, faking it till we make it.
Using sense of humor is important. Have fun. You know, you could play all kinds of silly things at home too.
Right. And it's just trial and error. Like some things will work with maybe one of your children and maybe it won't work with another one. Every child's different. And I think just knowing that it's okay. Not every strategy you try will work, but it's just making sure your child knows that they can come to you and have a conversation. And just, you know, it really is being a role model for them that I think is really the most important thing at the end of the day.
And you will work it out. You let them know, not sure exactly how, but we're going to figure this out. Right. We're family. We're a team. We're going to do this.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been a great conversation. I think all of our parents that are our members will appreciate all the advice and tips, and I can't wait to implement some of them myself.
And I'm happy to, you know, if anyone has any questions, let them know how to contact me. I'm happy to help out because this is what's really important.
Definitely. I appreciate it. Next time on Behind Bundle, we're going to talk about special needs and autism in the time of COVID and how virtual learning can support those needs and those individuals and what support there is out there for working parents and caregivers.